Okay, looks like everyone's here. Let's call this meeting to order. May we have a roll call, please, Laura?
Director Sesenia.
I'm here.
Director Gatchell. Director Ohilski.
Present.
Vice President Forcroy.
I'm here.
President Womack.
Present. Excellent. First on the agenda, we have a public hearing to receive input from the community regarding the voting area scenarios. And I believe David Lopez is here to present, or do you start it off, Ron?
I just have a very short introduction. Thank you.
Okay.
Next slide, please, Laura. I always just like to start off with a little bit of background for people that are watching or attending. We started this process back in January 2021, adopting a resolution declaring that we are going to transition to bi-area elections. Back in June, the board approved a proposal from Cooperative Strategies to provide districting services, and that's David Lopez, which is here with us tonight. We've had two pre-map public hearings on August 5th and September 2nd. And now next slide, please. Tonight, we have the public hearing to look at the scenarios, the three scenarios that Cooperative Strategies has come up with, and look at the boundaries and how the voting areas are in each scenario. And we are asking for public and board input and any questions that may come up during this discussion. And with that, I can turn it over to David. And I did want to say, not only with David, but Jeff Minery, we have been talking about trying to answer any questions the board may have. So please take advantage of Jeff being here tonight.
Thank you. It looks like I joined just in time.
Thank you.
Good job, David.
I'm also going to be joined by Andrew Bishop from our shop at some point here soon, but I'm gonna share a screen if I'm not mistaken. Or do you have the?
You should be able to share your screen at any time. And Andrew's here; he just has your name as well on.
Oh, okay. So let me get to that here. Let's see here. Okay, we'll start with the small version in the presentation, if you don't mind, and then we can address the larger map scenarios as they come up here. So let me share this here. Can you all see this?
There we go.
Okay, so this is what we call a post-map one, the conceptual scenarios that we drafted. And I just want to go over the materials that were previously covered, and that is the timeline, which is in front of you here. We're at October 7th, obviously. After this, there'll be another meeting and public hearing to talk about any other scenarios or revisions that might be needed. Sometimes what happens is the board says, I really like map one, two, or three, and we want a slight revision, or can you alter it this way to include this or that? And we call those essentially the same. They'll be the same map number, but they'll be map A, map B, map C, whatever it may be if needed. So that'll be for November 4th. And then the intention is that on December 2nd, that's when we have a final hearing to adopt the scenario that was proposed and reviewed in two prior meetings. So that's where we're at. We're on target and everything's looking good with that. Again, the considerations, the first two are musts. We have to do this by population and try to ensure that each trustee or each director area, board of director area has as close as possible to an equal number of members within it. Population-wise, and it could vary up to 10%, but we try to get that lower than that. And it must comply with the Federal Voting Rights Act. All of these other considerations we try to put into it, but sometimes you can get them all, sometimes you can't. but we do try and look at it, and the first two are musts. And then to give you a background, the 2020 census data that was certified looks like this as it pertains to your district. You have 14,124 population-wise folks for the census. And so this is all used and considered in this process. And again, the voting age population estimates, looking at the largest minority group Hispanic, this is the distribution. And this is called CVAB data, which is citizen voting age population data from 2015-2019. And so sometimes when you see scenarios where you have a population in CVAB data, they don't add up because they're estimates of what the voting age population would be. And we use this solely to ensure that there's no cracking or packing. If there's a majority minority district, it can be taken into account or in other considerations, but that's why this is used. And it's, as I said, it's secondary to the whole population thing when we draw up the scenarios, but it's a very important component to make sure we're in compliance with the Federal Voting Rights Act. We came up with three scenarios. And is this map large enough, or would you like to see a even larger map? Is this, can you see this okay?
I think larger might be nice.
Okay, let me bring that up here and see if it's right underneath here. There we go. Okay, so this is scenario one.
That's better? Thanks.
Okay, mm-hmm. So they're color coordinated by, obviously by areas we numbered them by. Each director or the director's current residence or fall within this. This information is the key because it looks at the makeup of each area population-wise and the variance to the ideal. If you were to take this and divide it by five, that would be the perfect number. And then this number is a variance to that ideal number. So area one, for example, has about 3.5% higher population than the median, and area three, which is red here, would have about almost 3% less. But overall, the variance is 6.44%. So this complies with the intention of what we're trying to do here. And what we did with this one is we just looked at geographical features and we looked at the census block. It's a very, very, you know, just focused scenario that is looking at population and natural breaks in the census block. So when we did this, each of these areas was drawn up. Obviously this area has three directors in it. We'd have to talk about sequencing, which I understand we will do at some point tonight. And then these folks here have their own area and there's two vacant areas in this scenario. The additional information behind this is as follows. So the ideal population for each one is 2825, and that's what I was mentioning earlier, the variance. And so this is this top chart is the total population and the breakdown of the ethnicity as reported on the census. And this gives you the total number of each conceptual area for the directors and the population variance between the ideal population. The census also provided age 18 and older. This is only for informational purposes, but it did have that. And I bring that to your attention because the thought here is that if they're 18 and over, there's gonna be a lot of the voting age population in there. Whether they vote or not is a different story, but that's why it differs from these estimates here of the citizen voting age population. So this is used to make sure that there's no cracking and packing. This is just informative piece that we have from the 2020 census. And then the top one is just a population breakdown for each area. Does that make sense before we go on to some other scenarios? Okay.
It does to me.
That's scenario one. And we can go back to these as needed. I just want to go through them all first so that you can see what was done at each phase here. I'm going to show you scenario two here, which was a little bit different because we looked at some different features here. We looked at some different census blocks and shifted some stuff around. We know that this area of the district and this area is probably, these are your most dense areas population-wise, but I think these areas have the most opportunity for future growth. I know not so much down here, but that's what we ascertained in looking at, you know, some of the geographical features and the lay of the land. So that's also explains why some areas are much larger than others. But in this particular scenario, the variance is less than 6% in the conceptual board of directors areas we drew up. You have two directors in this particular area, area two, and you have two in area four, one here, and again, no incumbents if this was going to be considered. Now, Andrew, maybe you can talk a little bit to this as what I can tell you scenario three, but this one was a little modification that was done to see how things played out and see if actual features work better. And Andrew, I didn't know if you had any comments as to why you know these were chose population-wise, or any light you can shed on the variations between this and one.
It was just trying to piece different parts of the community together using different major roads. I think in the scenario one, we had used the Pacheco Valley road as the boundary between one and two. So we focused more on that community north of Pacheco there in the green, and keeping the rural areas on the west together in this scenario, as opposed to using Pacheco Valley as a sole divider there.
Yeah, so that's what I recall, but I didn't know if there was other pieces to it. So that's one of the fun things you get to do when you look at this. And again, the population and the census blocks are key. I know sometimes people say, well, this is a whole neighborhood here. Can you keep it together? And maybe it doesn't work population wise. And we follow the census blocks that are done. It's not ideal to split these up and then try to figure out who's in what. So that's why the two different scenarios here. And almost as an afterthought, we put in the directors here because we wanted to look at all the different options. And then the third scenario we did, we can share this too. This has, like I said, a lesser variance of the scenarios, has about the same breakdown of population across the board distributed. Again, census is reflecting, this is population 18 and over, and the estimates of the citizens by voting age population, of course, differs from that. This particular estimate gets updated later in the year with the 2020 census, but this is what's in existence right now, and it's a tool that we use to ensure that there's compliance with the Federal Voting Rights Act. So they differ compared to the actual census population. But again, the criteria that was used was that last table and this table and coming up with this particular scenario. And scenario three is an interesting one because it really worked out that this could be a possibility where you don't have to have further conversations about sequencing. And the reason for that is because when we drew this up and tried to look at what communities stay together and the census information, keeping in mind the population and the ethnic makeup, this worked too. And in this situation, each director actually falls in an area that is conceptually drawn here. And so in this situation, you wouldn't have what's called sequencing. Who falls off? Who starts? Do we have elections here? Do we wait till 2024? And again, it's another scenario that we drew up we took into account other features. We wanted to tweak some of the boundaries and areas. And then this one worked out that the directors fell within these boundaries. So this is another situation. This one has a 8.67% variance between the population from the largest to the smallest here. It still works, it's still in compliance. And the demographic data here is as follows. You have 102 variation in one and, you know, 143 less in another. The population 18 and over is what it is. It doesn't match the CVAP information, but again, a lot changes in 10 years from census to census and from even this period where they extrapolated voting information. So this particular scenario works, and it works in a way that's a little bit different in the sense that, and I wouldn't say that it's rare, but it's rarer than others where you have each director already falling within one of the conceptual areas we drew up. So that said, these are the larger maps, and you know the presentation itself goes into some other issues. We can talk about what ifs and, you know, what if we do this? What do we do this? Why do we draw this way? But I'm open to any questions you have, or if you want me to continue the presentation as is.
Oh,
there wasn't too much left here. It was, let's see here. I think it was over here. There we go. So what we did in the presentation was we looked at each scenario and then we put CVAP information side by side. So it's the same information, but it's in a different format so that you can see it more clearly. And again, each of these three conceptual areas would be compliant with the CVRA and the Federal Voting Rights Act. It's just a question of what makes sense to your community and yourselves. And again, scenario two has the same information, the proposed areas for each director, the citizen voting age population estimate, total population, the variance, all the ethnic group percentages. And then you have number three, which was the one where all the directors fell within a separate area, unique to themselves. Again, it has the same numbers here, kind of the same population by ethnicity. And so these are just the first scenarios we took a stab at that makes sense to us as demographers, but there may be other considerations or things that you guys want to talk about or the community would like to address or council. So now's the time to discuss whatever you'd like, and we can go in more detail about any of the scenarios or answer any questions.
Okay, this terrific. Is, thanks, David. Mm-hmm. Oh,
this is
I know
Matthew.
That there are,
I'd like to ask some questions.
I was going to say, I know that there are several questions out there, and I do see some of the public, but we'll start with the director questions.
Okay.
Go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, I wanted to, well, first of all, I'm really glad that we got this study to this point. I think it's really important to understand what our demographics are. But I kind of want to take a higher level look at this. I guess my question revolves around, do we, with at-large elections, with just one district, have a violation of the Federal Voting Rights Act or the CDRA at this point? I mean, your first map that showed our distributions looked like it was fairly homogeneous. And in that case, do we have an issue that needs to be solved with districting?
So that's more of a legal question than, you know, we get brought in as demographers. We're doing this across the state right now. And, you know, quite honestly, some districts have less of an ethnic minority presence than others. And, you know, we're aware of the California Voting Rights Act and what it entails. And as far as, you know, does our district, you know, I get this question a lot. Does our district discriminate against minorities if we don't have a majority? Those are questions beyond my, you know, beyond my scope. And also there's an additional question that gets asked a lot is, does this process, if we go to trustee areas or by director, does it solve all of the things that the California Voting Rights Act was intended to address? So those are they're good questions. They're hypothetical or legal questions that, as demographers, we, you know, I don't get into the weeds on, but I can tell you there's other districts like yours that have this kind of makeup. There's smaller districts, there's gigantic districts. Everybody's different, but you know, that's a question better discussed between your board and your community and council.
Well, I appreciate that. I think for me, that's a very important piece of information. I can think of some disadvantages of going to districting, as in, would we sometimes have districts where nobody ran, and then we'd be in an appointment process. So I'm really looking to understand what the benefits are. Okay. For districting. And I get that maybe that's not your answer, but it seems like we're not seeing, I'm not seeing a concentration here that would where people are not getting equality in elections. I don't see it yet.
So sure. Let me interrupt and let's throw this and ask Jeff Menry what his opinion is, and then you can continue with your other questions. Does that sound good?
Sounds good.
Jeff?
Great. I'm here.
Thank you.
Thank you, President Womack, directors of the board. At this point, everyone is moving towards district-based elections, and the bar is really low. As you are aware, no community that has challenged this, with the exception of Santa Monica, has prevailed, and it's been very, very costly to challenge a demand that you district. The Supreme Court is considering the issue of what bar the plaintiffs need to hurdle before forcing the districting of a community. And that remains at the Supreme Court level right now. Briefing is done. We don't have a decision. We don't have any idea of when oral argument or when a decision from the Supreme Court will be made. But that is an issue that many communities are waiting on. So my take is that the safest route for your agency is to move ahead with districting, because I think that history has shown that you would not prevail, even if there's a small shift. I will say that because community like yours, especially with the low disparity among the communities, which is shown through scenario 1, 2, and 3, scenario 3 is attractive to me in that it keeps your current directors seated. And then depending on how the Supreme Court rules on the Santa Monica case, your board could go back to at-large elections with the least amount of disruption. So right now, I think the safest route is to not risk fighting a CVRA lawsuit and district in regards to scenario 3, so that you have the least disruption if you do decide to go back to at large. Does that make any sense?
It does. Thanks, Jeff. Does the board have questions for Jeff or more?
So, yeah, this is Matthew. So we're not doing this for a benefit to the community. We're doing this as a way to ensure that we aren't getting sued.
Well, the idea is that it's a benefit to the community. The CVRA requires plaintiffs to prove that the ability of a protected class to impact voting is impaired due to the dilution of the voter rights. And so that is a very low hurdle currently for a potential plaintiff that wants to force this. I do not believe your board, I think your board's ahead of the game. You didn't receive a letter demanding districting, did you, Ron?
No, we did not, though we had an interested party questioning what route we were going to take.
Okay. So what we know and what we knew at the time that your general manager moved forward with bringing this to the board was that if you did not move forward in the direction that you are going, the chances that you would have received a letter, which comes with a $30,000 price tag, essentially, would have put you in this situation anyway. So your general manager moved to bring this ahead now to avoid that cost, which would have ended up essentially bringing us to the same point we are here today. So my advice would be to continue with redistricting, take a wait and see approach, disrupt the district as much as possible, and disrupt the district as least as possible, and await the decision from the Supreme Court. If the Supreme Court does not support Santa Monica, then districting is certainly where you would be anyway.
All right, thank you.
Sorry, don't have a better answer for you, but the idea of the legislature is that this is the best route.
And if I can interject real quick, at the beginning of this process, we talked about safe harbor, and the only safe harbor is districting under the current, until the Supreme Court rules on the Santa Monica case, the only safe place we have not to be served with a demand letter. If the board chooses not to district minus a decision on the Santa Monica case, it is a risk. And are we willing to accept that risk and the liability that would result from that risk?
All right, thanks, Ron.
Can you quantify what you mean by risk? I mean, what are we talking about? We're going to get into a lawsuit. I don't understand exactly what that means.
Well, the risk is the demand letter and an automatic $30,000, and then whatever else we want to apply if we're going to fight it.
Okay, thank you.
Did you have more questions for our demographers? Matthew?
Nope, I'm good. Thank you.
Other directors?
Yeah, Chris, I did.
Okay, please.
So I, of all these scenarios, having lived here a long, long time, I like scenario one the best, because the idea of where the directors live shouldn't be a long time consideration, because what this does is it unifies the neighborhoods in our community. So I see these neighborhoods as subsets of the community, and this one accurately represents them to the best of the ability. So the question is, if we do go with this scenario and assuming that Santa Monica doesn't win the lawsuit, how does it work for these directors that are in the same district? How does that play out?
So that's a great question. And I think somebody asked earlier, what happens if we have a vacant area? Those are great questions too. And, I'll reiterate this, what we've seen in the years of creating voting areas like this is that oftentimes, and I've talked to a lot of council, I've never seen a situation where there's a vacancy and nobody runs for it or nobody can get appointed, because what strange thing happens, I guess it's not so strange, maybe it's counterintuitive, but when areas are dedicated to, this is your voting area, this is your board of director area, we often see that there's more community involvement and that people who ordinarily wouldn't run would run because this is their neighborhood now, and they feel they have a stake in it, or they have less money that they have to contribute to their election. So it does happen that if there's vacancies that theoretically somebody could not run, or you'd have trouble on the board, or have to appoint somebody to be that board of directors for that area. But we haven't seen it happen in all the years, and I've talked to council everywhere and nobody has seen it, a situation where you just can't get someone to run. So if that's a consideration, hopefully that story I just told you alleviates it, because it's based on our just observations of doing this and other attorneys who work with us a lot. Now, to your question of how do these current directors, what happens in this area? That's a discussion that's called sequencing, which I'm glad you brought up, because there's different ways to do this. And I'm just going to start with the easiest one because it's fresh in my mind. So let me just point to scenario two here. So in this scenario, and I'll go back to one, I'm not trying to avoid your question. In this scenario, there's a member that term expires in 2022 and one that expires in 2024. I believe these are the same. There's a 22 and a 24.
Yeah.
So yes. What I'm going to say for area four applies here. And this is fine to have open discussion on how you want to do that. If one scenario one or two is chosen, what happens is you could have an election in 2022. Well, what I said earlier, the easiest thing that we usually see a lot is the director that term expires in 2022 falls off and the current director continues their at-large term until 2024. Once one person drops off, you can hold an election in a vacant area that doesn't have an incumbent. That's one option. The other option with sequencing is that you can have an election in 2022 when the first incumbent's term expires, and they both can run against each other along with whoever else wants to run. If this director whose term expires in 2024 wins, then they get a whole new term and that becomes their area. And none of these areas that are vacant get, would have an election until somebody else drops off, because you can't have more than five people at any time. So if that's one scenario. The other is to have elections in 2022, or like I'm saying, the 2022. And if this person lost and one of the incumbents here won, this person will still serve at large until 2024. So what happens is you don't have an ability to vote for somebody in these vacant areas until somebody drops and you have four people or three people. So which one's fair? That's up to you. I've heard them, people say they're both fair. You know, one has to wait till 2024 to run and then they both run for that area. Or you have elections in 2022. And if this person wins, then that's it. They're there for the time they're there. If they lose, they're still serving out their term additional 2 years, but it's going to be at large. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think I'm a little lost.
Did I confuse you?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
Let me ask a question. Just keep the scenario two, even though I like scenario one. So let's say that one of the directors decides to not run for re-election in 2022. Okay. Then what happens?
So in this situation, this person's term expires in 2022. This person expires in 2024.
It's actually the opposite, but.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Okay. Then I have them wrong. This is 2024. This is 2022.
Correct.
If one decides not to run in 2022, in this particular scenario, this person would drop off. You can continue to serve until 2024 at large.
Right.
Because this person dropped off, you can hold an election here or here. But you could also say, well, let's have an election in 2022, and this person would be at large incumbent for until 2024. But then, and they could be thrown into the election. They can say, wait a minute, if I lose, I'm an incumbent till 2024, somebody else runs and they win. Or this person and somebody unknown can run who resides in this area in 2022. And then this clock resets for this person because their incumbency changes now. They've won and they become this trustee area. Does that make it clear?
Sort of, but let me ask this question. So let's say this first election is going to be in 2022, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And can we just, as a board, basically say we're having elections in all five districts with two of them having two-year terms and three of them having four-year terms. And that way it's all resolved in 2022.
I suppose you can, but then let me think about that and get back to you and work through council, because if you have by area elections in 2022, everybody's going to, in this particular scenario, four incumbents are going to be vying for two spots, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Two will lose, two will win. So I suppose that's allowable. And then you have the vacancies freed up for the, you know, the areas that are adopted that have no incumbents. But I think what happens is whoever the 2024 person is continues to serve at large.
Okay, we're going to have to get
clarification. Your term doesn't expire if you all decide to vote in 2022. People who are elected in 2024 will serve in at-large capacity, but they just may not be serving their particular district,
right,
or their particular area.
We'll have to get a legal analysis of this, because the people at terms expire in 2024 could agree to the election and say, you know, we're going to resign if we're not reelected. I mean, there's ways to manage this. So,
yeah, I would imagine if there was overall agreement and it didn't conflict with any particular laws, I suppose you could do that. I would have to work with council on that from what we've seen.
Well, if we could get that answer for our next hearing, I would appreciate it.
Sure.
That doesn't sound very fair to those of you that have longer terms. Just an observation.
But, you know, there's a lot of unknowns, Chris. Some people may not want to run in districts. Some people may not. And there's a lot of things that play here.
Right. Okay. Did you have any further questions?
No, I think I confused the thing enough. I'll step back now.
All right. Chuck, did you have any questions?
No, I'm just trying to sort through this all. And Area 3 is the one that just problematically comes to me, because you've got areas east and west of South Bay Boulevard that are very different, high density, you know, multifamily areas to the west of South Bay Boulevard, and big, large rural communities to the east. So it just, you know, when we talk about trying to make districts homogenous, that just popped into my mind. But I don't know how else you solve that problem, because you've got the population numbers that you need to take care of. So and this is the first look that we've had at a color-coded map, and this the chart with the two comparisons. And I wish we'd have had that in our packet ahead of time to maybe help us see this better. This is a little more complicated than I had expected. And that's it for now.
Okay, thanks, Chuck. And I think this is a chance for us to give feedback if something doesn't feel like a neighborhood, or, you know, mm-hmm. and they can work with that. Because I kind of feel, I don't know, Marshall thinks that map one does the districts the best, but I do kind of like the blue district on map two. That's kind of like all the people that are on the water. But I agree with Chuck that I think the areas to the east that have bigger lots, that feels more like a neighborhood and shouldn't be chopped in half by Los Osos Valley Road. Does that
but
make
it's
sense?
To me, Los Osos Valley Road isn't necessarily the separator there, because
right, I agree with you. I think it isn't the separator on the east side of town. I think the east side of town is the more the bigger lots. And so, but I think we can give feedback to the demographers and they can play with it and try to keep the variance down and the neighborhoods intact and the numbers of people similar. I mean, by shifting things a little bit, I think it might still make our aims.
Well, I think, Chris, one of the things that we need to have is we need to have access to these scenarios so we can play around with them, because as Chuck said, well, this is the first time we're seeing them. So we need to physically have access to these.
Well, I don't know if we need that. I think what we do is give them our opinions, and then they would change it for the next meeting, right? Isn't that possible?
I don't necessarily disagree with you on two, but they're small areas, but I need to be able to see 1, 2, and 3 when I'm sending my comments in.
I agree. I would really like a copy of this to be able to digest and then offer comments that could come back before the next meeting.
Directors, just so I can interject, it was attached to 2A, these maps. So they are available online. And Chuck, I do apologize. I didn't print it in color for those who I delivered paper copies to.
Yeah, maybe I should have gone online and done it that way.
Yeah, that's what I did, because you do need the color, or it makes it much easier.
Okay, well, if we already have them, then that's fine. Is the statistics there too?
Yes. The only thing you're missing in David's presentation is, what is that, David, over there on the side? Those particular stats.
Yes.
CVAP isn't there.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's in the presentation itself. Not the support documents to the maps are different, but this is there at the bottom. But the larger maps that are on the website have one more table. But this is all in the presentation here.
Great. So, Ron, should we read off Troy's questions, and then I'll do mine?
Sure. I did give those questions to David and Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
So we can do that. Or I don't know if you want to go to public comment yet, or...
Yeah, we could do that, because we can discuss it more when we bring it back, right?
Should I stop sharing at the moment?
No, I'd keep sharing.
Okay.
Yeah, I like the maps. I think keep the maps up for people to give their feedback. Okay. Yeah, let's go ahead and open public comment.
All right, and David and Andrew, we will wait until after public comment is finished before we answer. If you'd like to make a public comment and you're on your phone, please dial *9. If you're on your computer, please raise your hand, or you can ask a question in the question and answer box, and I will read those. First, from Bella, she says, how long is the current term for an elected member, and what is the goal of redistributing the demographic? There is an anonymous attendee that says, I will run for my District 4. I encourage you to get young people more involved. Why is a lack of community involvement the main issue? Engage with us. As a member of the public, why is term length an issue, especially when you're implying that no one will run? And is it on your website? And yes, the staff report is on our website under the Board of Directors meeting as agenda item 2A. And there is no other public comment at this time.
All right. Thanks for the public comment. Did you want to answer that, Ron, or?
I'm not quite sure how. I would have to hear Bella's comment again. There's several things packed into that.
Bella's comment was, how long is the current term for elected members, and what is the goal of redistributing the demographic?
Okay, so the current term is 4 years.
And they're staggered between directors.
Right. So there's three seats up this coming election, and then for 2022, and then in 2024 there are two seats, but they're all 4-year terms. And
the purpose of districting is, and David, you might be able to give me better terminology for the California Voter Rights Act, if you don't mind.
Well, you mean the purpose of drawing up trustee voting areas or director voting areas?
The purpose of the California Voter Rights Act.
So the purpose of it is to ensure that there's, there's areas where you can have by area election instead of by at large, which allow for, a greater representation and a concept where population determines the size of each area, and there's a better representation among historic minority groups by making those considerations within those areas. So if you want to look at it in a simple way as it relates to your district, you have at large now, but if you have by district voting areas, it's something that you can grow to the future with as your demographics change, something to look at, but mainly it divides each area by as equal as possible of population so that people can represent their, I like to say the neighborhood where they walk their dogs, and it also takes into account any issues with the voting equality and inequity with historical minority groups. Whether or not you have enough of them or a sizable population to, to make everyone happy according to the California Voting Rights Act is a different story, but it's set up to be handled that way by population and have a distinct area and then make considerations towards the ethnic groups in your or historically disadvantaged ethnic groups within your community.
Thank you.
Okay, was there a third piece to that?
I don't think so.
Okay, thanks for submitting a question. So I had a question. If we're trying to encourage ethnic minority groups to be able to have a seat, then would we try to make a district have more of those ethnic minority groups? Or it seems like they're all the areas are pretty even ethnically.
Yeah, when you look at a community and you say, hey, we can create a majority minority district there because of how the population shapes up within the district, that's something that we will strive to do. Your community has a spread of folks that really wouldn't allow us to put them all in one area that makes any geographical sense, any even common sense in some cases. And if we were to carve a snake-like figure throughout your district to capture them all, then that's pretty much tantamount to gerrymandering. And that's not, that's not the spirit or intent of the CVRA. Now, other communities, it's clear as day. I'm going to a meeting next week for 3 days. It's going to be community meetings and engagement. And they have they're classic California towns where you have this side of the railroad track and this side.
Right. And so
it makes it much, much, it makes it as challenging, but it also makes it easier to show such demographics to people. And there's less feedback that we typically get as to why we're doing this. But there are a lot of communities in California, much like yours, where, you don't have a significant population of what's considered a historic minority group that you can make a majority minority district. And but you're still drawing these up in compliance with the CVRA as counsel, and some of because there's a lot of plaintiff's attorneys out there that are challenging districts like yourself.
Thank you. That answers that question. I guess, like, if we were to try to kind of do one that wasn't gerrymandering, it might be more the center of town. Like, that would be an area.
Like, right here?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it, you know, an interesting thing that I should probably tell you, and Andrew can speak to this in more detail if I'm not making sense. You know, a lot of times we propose these and somebody says, well, here, this area north of Highland, that's all one area. That's one neighborhood. You should make it green. Well, then that adjusts the population. And then yellow has to grab a piece from red. Red has to grab a piece from purple. Purple grabs a piece from blue. Blue cuts. It's not always as simple as let's just follow this and cut it out, because we have to see what the population. We also follow the census blocks here too. I mean, these are census blocks. The bigger ones generally are less population, or they're rural, or they're marshlands, a million things, right? Mm-hmm. So we take into account that, and that's why some of them stop where they do. You know, I think, no, not so much that one, but this piece. And then in scenario three, you know, you got some pieces here. So it's logical. People say, hey, I want this cut out and thrown into yellow. Okay, well, now we have to redo everything because the population shifts. So just be aware of that. We'd like to come back with, you know, scenario 3A or 2A or whatever, based on your feedback through your staff and or council.
So but that little no carve out that you just pointed out, that does bug me.
Which one?
The way that green goes, like that yeah. whole, that, okay. I mean, that's actually, I used to live over there, and that would just, and I would be in the yellow, and that just would have been weird. So.
Okay.
Just, well, we could just well, I, give you know, that if, feedback.
If you recall, David and Andrew, I that bugged me as well, but it was because of the census tract information yeah. that we couldn't do that. And so that's what he's talking about. It's not
right.
as easy as just saying, oh, just pull these streets. It's just harder than that. And I know Andrew was trying very hard to balance things out when we were talking last week on this.
Correct. And with the district as small of a population as this is, moving one or two census blocks could mean 200 people. And that gets us to that 10% variance real quick.
That was one of my other questions, was what's the limit on variance? So I'm guessing it's 10%.
We're targeting a 10% variance between our low and our high. So we don't want to have too much of a difference. And so I did look at trying to grab that neighborhood, but in that scenario, you know, an alternative version, you know, you would see, it wouldn't just be a tweak to the green, as David mentioned. There'd be other pieces that have to move to kind of get back into that 10% window.
Okay. But you were, I thought part of this meeting too, is you are looking for our feedback as to Absolutely. What makes sense to us.
Correct.
Absolutely.
Okay. But I'm glad that Ron pointed that out too, because that was one that kind of bugged me.
We can certainly the other part look, is, we can certainly burn the midnight oil and see if we can put those two in another, you know, clean that up for scenario three. But, you know, like I said, the chances are there's going to be four other shifts, and hopefully nobody has a problem with those shifts when we clean up that. But we can certainly run that and see if it's there's something else that can be done.
Right. Or go back to scenario one and try to, can we tweak that one?
So here's scenario one. What would you propose?
Well, you know what I like? I guess it's easier for me to compare scenario two, where okay. they kind of have all the Santa Isabel, things north of Santa Isabel. To me, like, those are all on the water.
Okay.
Like, can you, like, what would it look like, say, if you use Santa Maria instead of Santa Isabel, and maybe Pismo instead of Ramona.
No. That doesn't make any sense, Christine. Ramona's the splitter there. So what would happen if you see where that little green thing is down in the yellow zone there?
Yeah, that's weird.
See, if we could move that out of there, then I think I would like this one.
Andrew, do you remember how much population was in here? I know we needed to grab it to balance it.
I don't recall, but if you all give me a minute, I can pull up my information here.
Yeah, that's the area with Sunnyside School. And then you just have the...
Oh, that's a school site, right?
Well, not all of it. There is residential along Palisades there.
But it's a lot of commercial too in our fire department and
right. The commercial's on the I don't think that there's any residential in that green zone right there.
A little bit.
Yeah. And commercial doesn't matter. That's not where voters live, right?
That's right.
So all right. So did we get Troy's questions answered then? Was that already done?
I think most of Troy's questions were answered because they're about sequencing. I can pull up his, I don't have those right here in front. Hang on.
Oh, I've got it. If there are no candidates running in a district during an election cycle, how is that handled? Maybe that was answered.
Right.
Yeah, that's the interesting, to me it's interesting that in our experience and that of many council we worked with, it gets asked a lot, but we've never seen it in practice happen, especially once the trustee areas are created, because it gives that, you know, that neighborhood feel, it cuts the cost of running for election, and suddenly people who may not have considered running ever before are incentivized to want to cover their area.
Yeah, and I totally understand that, David, but we have LOCAC, which is our local advisory council, and they run theirs in districts, and there's been more times than not that there's been nobody running in certain districts and multiple peoples in other districts. So we've had an experience. Now, obviously that's not the same level of government as that, because it's an advisory council, but still that's something that we're concerned about.
Absolutely.
And I appreciate your comments about, you know, cheaper to run and incentivizing and et cetera. So,
yeah. And
one big difference though, is that the LOCAC election is held by itself. It's on its own. It's the only thing on the ballot. It's at the community center. CSD election is part of a general election, which includes at times presidential elections, statewide elections. It's just a higher profile. And so you're going to get more interest. It's a shame that LOCAC has to struggle like they do. It really, really is.
No, and I'm not disagreeing with you, Chuck. I'm just stating that that's been a concern that's been expressed.
It has been. But I think the fact that we are part of a general election just gives it a higher profile.
Yeah, and in the event you guys were the one, I'm sure there have been in the past, not any that we've seen recently, but in the event that you adopted one of these scenarios and you had vacancies, and then there was an election and nobody ran for that voting area, the board has the ability to appoint someone who resides within that area to be the director, some civic leader, teacher, nurse, whatever.
Right. The seat won't go unfilled.
Correct.
Right. Yeah.
But I know it's nice and clean if somebody runs and you don't have that problem.
Yeah, the only issue there is if the board can't agree on a replacement, then the board of supervisors would name that person, which we don't want to have happen.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm looking at Troy's comments. Were there any scenarios that caused a skew in numbers? In other words, an underserved population?
No, they were all of these were done to ensure that the variance was in compliance with the law, and that is from the smallest to largest, there's less than 10%. Does that address the question?
Yeah, I think so, yes. Yeah. And you might have addressed them. I kind of just wanted to make sure Troy's, I made him send me a list of his questions. I want to make sure I don't miss them. Okay. So let's see. Let me read his general comments. He said, Ramona might not be a good divider between Los Osos and Baywood. What's that?
It says Ramona might be a good divider.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say Ramona is a good divider.
Okay. Also a natural divider towards Cuesta by the Sea. The District 3 in Scenario 2 makes more sense than dividing down the middle like Scenario 3 does. District 3 in Scenario 2 makes more sense than, yeah, I think I agree with that, that the east side of town should be together. Yeah. And Scenario 2 seems the best on this list, but there's a lot of guidance needed for overlapping terms. All right, I think that's all his stuff. Were we gonna discuss which one people liked, or is it just?
Well, we can make modifications to any of them. You can rule out one. You can say we really like 2 and 3, but we want some tweaks or modifications, or you to run differently if you can. But I ideally, if there's one or two that the board is favoring and you just want different versions of that, like scenario A and B for number 2 and scenario A for a modification at Trustee Area 3 or District Conceptual District Area 3, yeah, we can come back with those, because then we at least know what you're focusing on. And you might have to run it, you know, comments through Ron or council and get back to us, and then we can have those for the next meeting, because I understand, you know, you've had a couple hours to digest this and try to figure out what you'd like, and you might want more time looking at it. But right now, what I've taken from this is we want to see if we want to remove that. And several of you are happy with this.
Yeah.
Some of you are happy with this one in the sense the trustees are separate, but you don't like this divider and everybody hates this.
Yes.
Well, I don't know that anybody likes 3, to tell you the truth.
Okay. Well, we can resolve that then.
Now, if you can make that modification that we just talked about, I like 2 the best, because it does hanker into the community neighborhoods that we presently have, like Baywood is down there, and then the purple is semi-cool. I mean, I think this one is the best given what we've talked about. I originally thought 1, but now Chris has talked me over to 2 here. And I think that Troy agreed with 2 also, so.
Yeah, I think we can tell them what we, and I think we probably already have, what we kind of like, what we don't like.
I would just like to get rid of that little green piece on the other side of LOVR, because there's basically very few resonances there.
I agree with you. I don't like that either. So.
Okay, so we have that. And we'll see what removing this does, how things shift. Did you want us to run the scenario, but with taking this out somehow? And
no,
you didn't.
Well, you can show us what the numbers are and say, that's why we can't do it, because it's, I mean, or I can take your word on it that it's the variance doesn't work. That's fine. I get it.
Yeah, but I don't think putting that together with the Baywood, or pardon me, the Sea Oaks area and the mobile homes there and all that makes any sense, because it's a separate community to me. I just think doing it the other right. way makes way more sense. So yeah, Chris, you talked to me on this too.
Well, I think the east side of town needs to be together. Yeah. Regardless of where Los Osos Valley Road is. But okay. You can use it as a divider on the west side of town.
So generally folks are happy with this area three here.
Yes.
And area five.
Yep.
Area four is okay.
I'd be happy if you could play around with four and five to get me and Marshall out of the same district. But if you can't, you can't. So.
No, I think it's more logical. Chris, I think it's more logical this way. So.
Well, they can move streets a little bit. But yeah, overall, I think I like this one the best.
Okay, we can play around with two and maybe have a couple scenarios, or at least one that reflects some comments we received.
All righty. Thank you so much for that.
Sure.
And I thank some of the public for coming. I mean, I think it's best with more public comment. And so I'm glad some public showed up. And I guess we'll wrap this part up.
Okay.
But thank you. Thanks both of you for coming. We'll see you next month.
Yes. The fun continues. Take care.
All right. Let's open it up for public comment for items not on the agenda.
If you'd like to make a public comment for an item not on the agenda, please raise your hand, *9 if you are on your phone, or write a question in the question and answer. There's no public comment at this time.
All right, thank you. And administrative and committee reports. Do we have Paul Provence? Or are they busy with fires?
I'm here.
Paul's here.
Oh, right on. Well, I'm so glad you're here. Go ahead.
Stand by. Let me get, I'm a little technologically challenged, so it's going to take me a second to get the right windows up here. Okay, so board report, emergency activity, we're at about 147 calls, which is on average for the district. Still looking majority medical aids, not a whole lot of fires to speak of. Nothing really happened that was all that exciting for to report outside of the normal. Still got the COVID-19 stuff going on. We did see a little uptick in COVID-type calls. I won't say that they were confirmed cases, but COVID-type call, there was an uptick in September, pretty much hand-in-hand with what was going on in the rest of the county. Special programs and projects, I didn't have it, the information in time for the board report, but we were successful in our recruitment of new reserves. We just offered 12 conditional offers to candidates. We have some really, really good candidates so far. They've all accepted. We do have a target date of putting some into the academy, hopefully in November. Some of them are coming over completely trained. Some, I believe, are from the Morro Bay Reserve program, and some of them are from the San Luis Obispo County PCF program. So we're big borrowing and stealing from other places and giving them a good home. So we're pretty happy about that. All the candidates that participated in the physical abilities test were really good, strong candidates, and then they also interviewed very well. I just found out today that our fire engine is in the state. It is in Rialto at the Outfitters, and we will be packaging up the equipment and shipping it down to them so that they can start the process of putting all the equipment on the engine, i.e. the computers, the radios, mounting of the tools and such. So we're pretty excited about that. You may have seen a red fire engine running around town that's going to be similar to the paint scheme of the engine that's coming. Our engine is currently up at the shop in Paso Robles getting some annual maintenance done to it. So end of report.
Thank you. Excellent. We're very excited about that fire truck. And thanks for your report. Do we have the sheriff's department report?
It does not look like we have a sheriff in attendance tonight.
Okay. All right. And general manager report?
Yes, thank you very much. I did want to circle back just real quick to some of the utility department updates. I did want to mention that on the program CWELL, we did submit a grant application through the Small Community Drought Relief Program. Program CWELL estimated costs about $2.1 million. We submitted a grant for about $1.6 million. Margaret has been in communication with the state. We should hear something back by the middle of December on that. So hold your breath and let's see what happens. I did want to talk about the 16th Street South Tank Rehab Project. That's out to bid right now. We're expecting, or the bid does close on October 14th at 3 o'clock. So we're excited to see how that one bids out. We have had a little bit of slowdown in the 8th Street Upper Aquifer Well. We're getting submittals from the contractor. I believe I've mentioned that we're having supply chain problems for some of the electrical components, which may delay part of that project. But we're hoping to get underway soon on that. On to my general manager report, I wanted to say we did have our financial audit is now underway. We had the auditors in our office on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, September 27th through 29th to kick it off. We felt it went very well. Adrian was in the office, and of course, Laura and Alicia and I, and we felt really comfortable with the auditors. I think we made a great choice for changing over to a new audit firm. I did want to highlight, I started off saying, well, we've had quite a few employee anniversaries in the last couple of months. And then I realized that we have a lot of employees that were hired about the same time. So I did want to just throw in a list of our employees. And as you can see, the list, we range from 2 years to 22 years of service with the district. And I can't say enough about this group and how much I appreciate working with them and the service they provide the community. And then I always want to throw in the drought reminder. It's on everybody's mind. If you did look at our the data in the utilities report, water use for this August compared to last August was down about 9%. So the community is responding and we're very happy about that. Just please, everyone continue to conserve. And with that, I can answer any questions.
This is
the board go ahead.
Yeah, I have a couple. First of all, thank you for calling attention to the work anniversaries and our staff. We're nowhere without good staff, and I appreciate the work that they do and the fact that things seem to be seamless and we're not hearing about a lot, and that's what happens when you have good staff. To the infrastructure update, 16th Street, we've got some big work going on up there. What's our plan for community outreach? I assume we let the neighbors know ahead of time that we're going to be doing some work and they might be affected.
Yes, you know, it's a very constrained site. I don't know if everyone's been up there, but it's going to be a tough one. The good thing is since we're doing a complete rehab and going down, taking down off all that lead-based paint, it will be encapsulated. And so a lot of the work will be, you know, the sounds of the work will be muffled by that encapsulation and the collection of that. But we will do outreach, definitely some door hangers up there, maybe or flyers just to give the residents up there on that hill a heads up on what's going on. A good point, Chuck.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, we've done rehab work up there before and they're used to us being there. And you know, we always try and plant a visual screen, whatever we can do to fit in. I just want to make sure we're doing that. And again, on the utilities department report, remind me again, the 3rd Street well, upper aquifer or lower aquifer well?
That is an upper aquifer. It's in zone C.
I assume It yeah. had to be. It's we're able to tap it still, even if we've had to cut back Palisades and 8th Street. Okay.
Yeah. And no seawater intrusion. It's just one of those odd geologic formations right there.
Yeah. I kind of thought that might have been the case because I see what we're cutting back where we need to at Palisades and picking it up at 10th and doing what we can. Okay.
Yeah, I believe 8th Street, if you notice, runtime, we lost 8th Street for about 3 weeks during August. That's right. Why you're seeing some shift there.
Well, thanks for doing what you do to make projects happen.
Thank you. And I'll pass along to the crew your compliment.
Oh, it feels good. Just to be running kind of quiet.
All right, good questions. Any other questions for Ron? All right. Chuck, did you want to, I always skip past utilities. Did you want to say anything? Or?
You know what? I want to add one thing about the utilities committee that met last month. We reviewed the resiliency plan that I think was brought to the board. We've talked about it. And they fully approved moving ahead with the studies that we're going to have to be doing to ensure a plan B is in effect for this community. We still have two openings, and I think we're going to be filling those soon on that committee. And again, I appreciate the work that they do.
Thanks, Chuck. So the financial committee report, we approved the minutes, or the committee approved the minutes. They recommend the board approve the warrant register for September 2021 and receive and file the financials for the period ending September 31st, 2021. And one of our committee members, B. Jansen, needed to step down. And I'm hoping maybe for next month we can get a certificate of appreciation out for her. Definitely. So I'm sad to see her go, but I understand it. She's the president of the county PTA. So they oversee 33 schools and she has her plate full. Chuck, you need a new person on finance.
Thank you for the suggestion about the certificate of appreciation. We need to do as much as we can to support committee members. They volunteer for this kind of thing. And that's a good idea. And thank you for that reminder.
Great. All right. And let's see, there's no ESAC. Am I missing any meetings?
Yeah, well, other meetings. I have a couple.
Oh, please, Marshall.
Basin Management Committee met. And we basically got an update from the staffs for BMC that have been working on the sustainable yield process and how we're going to move forward determining sustainable yield. And I thought it was a very good discussion and good direction given back to the working group, and we'll have a substantive report at our next meeting. Ron, do you want to add anything to that?
No, but the working on the sustainable yield, the working group has had several meetings, and we will have some great information. I just saw it today. We had a working group meeting today. So I encourage people that are interested in the Base Management Committee and Water in Los Osos to attend that meeting.
Okay. Then the CSDA, we had our meeting, seemed like a long time ago, but it wasn't.
Was it Wednesday or Tuesday?
It was Tuesday.
It was this week. Yes.
It was Tuesday. I want to thank Laura very, very much for putting it together. We had really good attendance. It was done remotely. We had Rob Fitzroy, who's the new executive director of LAFCO for the county, gave a very, very interesting presentation, giving a LAFCO 101 or LAFCO for Dummies, however you want to look at it, which was very good. And then giving an update on how the process is working for the districts that are up for review, et cetera, in the upcoming year. And then we had a discussion about our IWMA representative, because that's situations in flux because of the county withdrawing from that because of the the styrene ban, but I don't want to get into that. So we have two candidates for the alternate seat that we'll be looking at for election at our next meeting. And Laura, do you have anything to add to that? And I do want to give you a big pat on the back because I thought you did an awesome job.
Thank you very much. And I don't have anything to add. You covered it greatly.
Oh, boy, I'm on a roll now. Those are the only two things I have to add, Chris, though.
Great. Thank you. Okay. We don't have any previously asked questions, do we?
We do not.
Okay. So is there anything that, do any board members want to pull anything from the consent agenda?
I have to ask a question here, Mr. Minnery, if I can.
Of course.
So I'm fine with the whole consent agenda, but with the providing the recycled water to the Audubon Society, I'm their attorney. It's pro bono. I don't get paid for it, but I just want to have no vision of any conflict. So I'm not going to vote on that item. Mm-hmm. I'll vote on all the other items. So do I need to pull that item, Jeff, or can I just say yes for everything but H?
Why don't we just note for the record that any vote for the consent item agenda as a whole, you are abstaining from item 6H.
Yep, that would be fine. I just want to make sure it's clear what I'm doing.
Okay, we'll make it clear in the minutes.
Okay, thank you.
All right, good idea.
And Christine, can I jump in here real quick?
Yes, please.
We discovered some typos for the minutes. It should be September 9th and September 29th on 6B. It should be up for 6C, September 2021, and on 6D, it should be September 30th, 2021. We apologize.
It would be through August, Ron.
Oh, I'm sorry. August. Yes.
Okay, I'm glad you found that so we can vote on the corrected consent agenda.
I do apologize for that. It is correct in the staff report.
Excellent. Thank you. I'm glad you caught it.
So, Chris, I'll make a motion to receive and file the administrative committee reports.
I have to open for public comment.
Thank you. Sorry, I forgot.
I was ready for it this time. Let's open for public comment.
If you'd like to make public comment on the consent agenda and you are on your phone, please dial *9. If you're on your computer, please raise your hand. There's no public comment at this time.
Okay, now I'll make a motion to receive and file the administrative and committee reports to approve the consent agenda with that one note that Jeff will add about item 6H.
I second that. This is Matthew.
All right, thank you. And then do we just vote?
Roll call vote.
There's resolution.
Okay. Oh, you're right. Okay. Laura, can you take a roll call vote, please?
Director Ohofsky.
Yes, with the exception of 6H.
Vice President Forcroy.
Yes.
Director Sesenia.
Yes.
President Womack.
Yes. All right. Do we have any future agenda items that anyone on the board would like to add? And hearing none, are there any closing board comments?
I would like to piggyback on what Chuck said, that with a smooth running organization, that, you know, all these things don't come to our attention, and that's an awesome way to go. And all these anniversaries that came up, Ron. I appreciate you bringing those to our attention. And I think that we should give them all a big round of applause.
I agree. Thank you. I will pass that along. Thank you.
I had just a couple things. I dropped out there for a minute. My battery went dead. And you were going through other meetings and that kind of thing. And I want to say that the BMC meeting was especially important this last month. There's kind of a shift in focus, actually, in terms of the goals of what we're going to accept in terms of saltwater intrusion. And it's important. There's some changes coming up. And again, I encourage people to tune into that meeting. It's an important one. And again, LOCAC, I reported for the CSD at the last LOCAC meeting, and I'm encouraged that they've formed an ad hoc water advisory committee to keep their own their council informed on water issues without depending on our report. Mr. Bishop from our utilities committee, actually, I think is on LOCAC, and he heads that ad hoc committee, or he's co-chair. And so it's good. They're studying the water issues, and they actually voted to send a letter to the Coastal Commission, the county, and everyone else that we sent our August 25th letter to, expressing support for our letter. So I've often hoped that LOCAC would become a more important avenue for discussions in this community, and I think it's happening. So kudos to LOCAC, and that's what I got.
Thanks, Chuck.
And thank you, Christina Marshall, for the dialogue about the districting today. This is a complicated issue. Matthew had good questions. It's not a simple thing, and we want to make sure we do this right, and I appreciate the engagement from the rest of the directors.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chuck. All right. Well, I'm glad that we had some public give us a little bit of input on this meeting. I hope that we'll get more, since we have two more discussions on the districting. The more feedback we get from the public, the better. I'd like to thank the demographers for their presentation, and thank the directors for their service. And thanks for Jeff for coming in and helping us wade through the legal issues and what are potential, trying to keep us out of the pitfalls of getting sued. And thank you for all the work that our staff does. Ron and Laura, you just make the meetings run very smoothly. So thanks to all, and I adjourn the meeting.
Good night, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Thank you.